Hey, you are listening to Abyss Gazing, a horror podcast where we celebrate all things spooky and mental health.
I'm your co-host, Mark.
And I'm your other co-host, Josh.
And today I sound like shit, but we're still here to talk about, was it Orphan First Kill?
Yeah, so we have two movies that we're going to be talking about today. And the first one is going to be Orphan First Kill, which you guys can see in limited release starting this Friday, as well as you can also stream it on Paramount Plus. And then on the flip side of this, we're also going to be talking about Glorious, which you guys can stream beginning this Thursday exclusively on Shudder.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about Orphan, because I think Orphan A is going to be the more recognizable property, probably why people clicked play on this episode. but also at the same time, I think Orphan is going to be a very interesting part of the conversation, because typically if I land one way on a movie, you land kind of the opposite. And I'm curious to hear where you landed with this one.
Well, I think the thing with this one is that they're doing a prequel to a movie that has a fairly solid fan base.
Yes.
Yeah. And the original Orphan was a decent movie, which happened to be loosely based on a real story, which I think I've told you that before. But
you have not, or if you did, I did not remember.
Yeah, it's loosely based on a real story. It's kind of influenced by a real story. I think it was like a Russian lady made herself up to be a kid and got adopted and stuff. And that's kind of how roughly what the background story is of this. The original Orphan is awesome. It's a good movie. It kind of reminded me of it almost of a modern take on The Good Son. Except she wasn't the kid.
Plot twist.
Yes. Yeah,
spoilers.
Spoilers to like a 15-year-old movie or older. But this one is more, it talks about the events that they mention in the first movie, that the previous family was a tragic accident and all that stuff. And that's what this one is how she gets out of the asylum and the background story of how she essentially pulls off a massive case of fraud.
Yeah, so this one's set 2 years before the movie. It is basically, like Mark said, it kind of fleshes out some of the shadier pasts of Esther's story from the original film from 2009. And before we get talking too deep into this movie, I will say that I had never seen Orphan before a couple weeks ago. And I have heard a lot about people from the fan base say that, like, oh man, this movie's really good. It's solid. It doesn't get enough talk. And to me, I kind of feel like it's an overhyped movie. I think it's definitely has its moments, but it's just kind of middle of the line horror to me.
I don't think it's fantastic and amazing. I think the original was good, not great. But some of the best horror has been good and not great, or some of the most fun. So I think it kind of falls in that category of good, entertaining, solid, rewatchable. Just not groundbreaking or phenomenal.
And honestly, like, coming out of this movie, and I'll share my thoughts on this and this, but I said where I landed on the original one, because I wanted to say, when I start talking about this one, I'm going to bring up a lot of other prequels that are modern day. So Mark, where did this one land for you? What are your general spoiler-free thoughts?
I got done watching it and I laughed, and I looked at my wife and just kind of laughed and said, it felt like the Hallmark Sci-Fi Channel straight to video release of a prequel.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I landed, as I mentioned, and as I predicted, I landed on the opposite side of that. I don't think this movie is amazing by any means, but this movie had enough twists and turns that it surpassed the original in my book. And I said I was going to bring up other horror prequels. When you look at movies like Annabelle and Annabelle Creation clearly outshines.
Oh, in Annabelle. Every way. In every yes. way.
And you also have Ouija and Ouija Origin of Evil that does the same thing. So, like, we've seen a lot of other films that have said, here's an idea, and we're going to prequelize this. I feel like my biggest problem with the original Orphan was the pacing kind of felt all over the place. Whereas with this one, the story felt a lot tighter. You knew, had an idea of how it was going to end, but I felt like the movie falls apart completely in the third act. Like, it was good for me up until the end of the second act, where it was revealed that, you know, you get the big reveal, in other words, since we're talking non-spoilers.
And for those that can't see, because you're listening to a podcast, I'm looking at Josh like he's kind of dumb right now. There's this, it, if you've ever seen a made for sci-fi channel horror movie, that's what this felt like. As soon as they started playing the story out, it was like, yep, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to turn out. And it was like almost like pre-scripted from various other movies. I didn't see any twists take me by surprise at all. It was like, wow, okay, yeah. Yeah, no, what I would give to be easily amused sometimes, Josh.
Look, so it's like for this one too, like this film, like stylistically also reminds me of the way that we go from strangers to the strangers prey at night, where the strangers had this very ominous, very like, you know, traditional home invasion. And then you go to the sequel, and it's a straight up slasher film. There are elements of this movie that feel a straight up slasher and feel stylistically different than the original film. And it's honestly surprised me that it took us this long to get a sequel to this movie, but also at the same time that we haven't gotten a almost like a slasher version of this character, because this movie, it borders on slasher.
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think it bordered on slasher. The first one, yeah. This one, no. This one felt like a who can top who can outdo who kind of thing.
That's how it eventually ended up, but I feel like there are certain ways in the way that everything is kind of grounded, or like sequences are shot, and the way characters are easily gotten rid of, it feels slasher to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to each their own, I guess.
How did you feel about the performances in this one?
Underwhelming, considering Julia Stiles was in it. And they did bring back the original actress for Esther, and she kind of felt like she was phoning it in at times.
Isabel Furman is her name. And yeah, I can definitely 100% feel her, because when you look at her filmography from the original Orphan to now First Kill, literally she's garnered some prestigious and well-acclaimed performances in films like The Novice, Hunger Games. You know, she's
I didn't know she was in Hunger Games.
Yeah. You know, but she's really kind of garnered a name for herself going and doing these like indie darlings and like critically acclaimed movies. So it kind of feels like she might be phoning it in. There are certain times where it definitely feels like it's phoning in. And it, I think also with that too, like this character was really beloved, but I feel like the great twist of the original film is that it felt shocking. Whereas in this movie, you came into this one already knowing the twist. And so the writers kind of write themselves into a corner with this third act. And Julia Stiles, I will say in my book, isn't necessarily terrible in this movie, but she definitely feels like she's channeling a B movie performance.
To me, there's nothing about this movie that says major release. It feels like a straight to video, we need a quick buck release.
Well, it is doing both of those. It streams this Friday, August 19th on Paramount Plus, and you can also rent it video on demand and see it at your local cinemas as well. Before we jump into our mental health moment for this movie, what is your score for this one?
2 out of 5.
See, we're not that. We are not that that far apart, because I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 3 out of 5, which will land Abyss Gazing giving this one a 2.5 out of 5. So once you guys have seen this movie, let us know where it lands for you. But moving on to the mental health aspect of this movie, and if you guys know, mental health moment is where we take a theme of mental health and we talk about it for a few moments while we, from the movie we're reviewing, in hopes to deconstruct the stigma surrounding mental health. So much like the first movie, there is a scene where Esther goes through therapy to kind of deconstruct, or to kind of bring some clarification for her parents. What has kind of happened to her since this disappearance that the trailer reveals. But there's a point in this movie where the therapist turns to the mother, who's the Julia Stiles character, and says, she turns to Esther and says, talk about it when you're ready. And we've talked about this over the last few episodes where listening goes a long way, but also being patient with someone can go even longer. Sometimes sitting in silence and just physically being near someone can be such a benefit to their mental health.
Yeah, and sometimes someone just needs an ear as opposed to hearing how to fix things.
Yeah, and you know, again, going back to what the therapist says, you know, talk about when you're ready, like Mark is saying, like sometimes people just need to vent. They don't need solutions. They just need to be heard. And sometimes they're not always going to be ready to talk about it. And they just need someone to be there for them and just sit there and wait in silence and embrace that awkwardness until you are ready to talk about it and address the elephant in the room.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes venting and getting it out does more good than hearing what's wrong or what you did wrong or how to fix it or a solution or whatever.
Absolutely. So we just want to encourage you guys to stop and listen. I know it feels like the older I get, and I'm starting to sound like Mark when I say this, but the older I get, the more value I find in time, and the more older I get, the quicker it seems like life fades by or just passes by really quickly, and it feels like almost a fever dream sometimes. And sometimes just being having someone near me or having someone that will just be there to listen really does make all the time in the world, because time is the most valuable resource we can spare.
And sometimes just listening can make the person that needs it feel valued and important.
Yeah, we talked about it last week in Prey, where, you know, it, just stopping and being physically with a person, and you know, like Mark was, you were just saying, like, just hearing someone out, like, can bring immense value to their own self-worth and how they see themselves. Because I feel like sometimes when you get caught up in those types of situations that make you want to vent or put you in really bad mental health spots, it's your, that depression or that situation makes you feel like you, your value is diminished or is less than because you found yourself in this situation.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to take a quick commercial break real quick. If you or someone you know is listening to this right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, depression, click the link in the show notes below. Check out our mental health resource library. And if you guys would like to sign up for Paramount Plus, also at the same time, there's going to be a link in the show notes below where you guys can check it out or get tickets to Orphan First Kill. But we'll be back in a few moments talking about Glorious.
If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. And as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because once again, you have value and you have worth. So please stay with us. How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today.
And welcome back, where we're going to be talking about Glorious, where J.K. Simmons plays a glory hole. I just want the synopsis to be left at that. Man walks into a truck stop. J.K. Simmons is a glory hole. That's all you need to know.
Yup. That's a great, great intro.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this movie. I don't really know what else to say. This movie took me by surprise with where it went and how it used comedy, but also violence. And it was like, all in all, like it's a really good sci-fi film as well.
So, first of all, we do tons of reviews for a lot of stuff, and we get to handle festivals and stuff too, and this was part of the Fantasia Fest. So I read the description on this movie, and apparently we got given screeners to watch it, and I was like, oh god, this is gonna be so dumb. And I started watching it, and my stepdaughter was in the room, and she's not a horror fan. She starts watching it and she's laughing, and we're both looking at each other like, the basis of this movie should not ever be this entertaining. And it's great.
Yeah, what I like about this movie is that it proves that sometimes simpler is better, and sometimes with these simple concepts and these simple plots, you can do a lot with. Like this movie, literally there is three people, maybe four people in the entire cast that are physically on screen that are not J.K. Simmons.
So there is a voice, there is a main actor, and then there's little appearances by a couple other people.
Yeah, so it's like, I think a total of like five people all together.
I never would have guessed that movie would have been as entertaining as it was.
Yeah, well, so I guess like jumping into this movie, just kind of doing, tried to be as non-spoilery as possible. Basically, the synopsis and a more serious note for this movie is that a man, brokenhearted, walks into a truck stop or a rest stop bathroom after having an all-night bender, and he meets a talking glory hole. Like, that's just what I'm going to say. There's no really other way how to describe this movie without getting into the plot, but I will say this. I'm surprised by not only how entertaining this movie is, how gorgeous it looks, but also at the same time, how deep it can get in certain times.
Yeah, it does. It actually is entertaining as it is. It actually does get into some deep topics and discussions in the movie in kind of a comedic kind of way.
Yeah, and I want to like say this, like, obviously I think a lot of people will know the main actor, Ryan, I'm going to suck at saying this name, Katawin, but he is the guy from, he's the lead actor from Dead Silence. If you've ever seen that movie, he is also from True Blood. So he's no stranger to the horror genre, and J.K. Simmons, of course, plays the voice of the glory hole. But yeah, this movie is just talking about the performances. The performances all around are really solid. They border on like really like actually like serious and deep, but also at the same time, like really slapsticky and kind of animated. And this movie is able to juggle a lot of different tones and be a really compelling character study at the same time.
Yeah, it's a lot more than it appears to be for being as limited as it is. Like the last movie I can recall that I've seen this limited in like cast and setting was like Buried with Ryan Reynolds, that takes place in a coffin the entire movie, and maybe Saw, taking place in a rundown bathroom. I'm not saying it's as good as Saul, but it is very highly entertaining nonetheless.
I will also add to that list another Shudder original, which was one of my favorites from last year, which was the slasher Shook. Also, Lucky could be thrown in that. That was another slasher from last year. Great movie. But yeah, how do you feel like the film handled some more of like the cosmic sci-fi elements in this movie?
It seemed like it was a very loose adaptation of like some Lovecraft, maybe.
Ooh, okay.
Very loose. Because when you get into that mythology, that's a whole other monster and super interesting if you're a weirdo. but that's kind of what it reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah, I will agree with that. The it welcomed in a lot of really spectacular visuals that I think worked really well. And the sci-fi, like, I'm not weird enough to know the Lovecraftian influence, but I can definitely see that. Definitely feels like that. Like, even the way that they dress up the glory hole is like, feels Lovecraftian, because it's like, it's weird to describe, because it's like, it has like a painting like around the glory hole itself. I'm just laughing because I keep bringing up the word glory hole.
Whoever thought we'd have an episode with glory hole mentioned this many times?
Yeah, you know, it's glorious.
Dude, it's just, I think part of why I was so highly entertained was I went in with such low expectations.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that if you can go in as blind as possible, it is really effective. And Shudder's really good about that, I feel like. Where one of my favorite films that has come out of that, two of my favorite films that have come out of that have been more recent Shudder with Revealer. And Revealer kind of has a similar color palette to this movie, where it has a lot of purples and reds and has a almost like a cosmic feel to it.
That might have been part of what reminded gave me the Lovecraft feel. Not only the sure. cosmic beings, but the lighting was very similar to Color Out of Space. And a lot
yes,
of
it was. Yeah, and also This Is War, which was another film that they just did a couple of weeks back. Like, I went in with really low expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised by both. Like, both of them just blew me the F away. And I think this one does a lot of unexpected. There's a lot of unexpected twists and turns that this movie takes as far as like the character development and how. So the main character, his name is Wes. That's who Quatan. I don't know how you say his name, but his last name. But that's how, like, his character is, like, you get these like flashbacks throughout the entire film. Like, he blacks out a lot in the movie, and that you kind of like have a better understanding of how he ended up here. And like, they developed that story so well, and I was invested. And then kind of when they did the reveal at the end, like, I was kind of like really floored and shocked, because I was expecting something along the lines of, oh, he cheated. I'm not going to spoil it. Like, you know, he was unfaithful, but like, not to the extent of where they took his character.
Did you catch the name of the god?
I did, but I also don't know how that is relevant. So, is that something we need to talk about off air?
I don't know. But I just thought that was a funny play on words, was the name of the god and how they blur it all together as one word. Sorry, I got distracted.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if you got the same feeling of what happened that I did between him and his significant other.
We don't know.
Yeah, we may have to take that one off air.
We may have to tell.
If we're not going to give any possible spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's... how they dealt with that topic was interesting because you learn more and more about him and his background that put him in the position he's in to begin with.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I feel like it's one of those movies that, like, the way that they run the parallel with, like, Simmons' character as the glory hole and Quetan's Wes, like, the way that they run those characters, you're like, oh man, like, you're trying to figure, like, there's a mystery whodunit element throughout the entire time of, like, how did we end up here? And then you get into the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie, and it completely changes the way that you see these characters and the journey that you've gone on for the last 85 minutes.
Yeah, it does, because he goes from being almost the comedic relief to, the way I took it, a piece of shit. So,
yeah, but I also, wait, with Simmons too, like, Simmons, I love Simmons as an actor just in general, but I love when he does voice work. And I think this one really utilized his kind of range as a voice work, because you get that kind of more innocent but authoritarian that we got with The Legend of Korra, but then you start to also get Whiplash Simmons as too. And I think both of those kind of really allowed for a lot of range for his character. And I feel like it's been a while since we've been able to see him kind of do something like that.
I don't recall anything I have seen him in. So,
J.K. Simmons?
Wait, hold on. I might be thinking of
J. Jonah Jameson.
Okay. I'm thinking of the wrong guy. I was thinking of, what's his name? Wes.
He's Ryan Catan.
Yeah, I don't remember him in anything.
Bro, we need to do an episode on Dead Silence then. One of James Wan's like first follow up to
that was the one with the dummies and the ventriloquists and stuff.
Yes, it was Mary Shaw. Okay.
I didn't realize that was the same. That guy was in that. But the other dude, Simmons, yeah, I always remember him as Schillinger from Oz more than anything else.
That's fair. But before we talk about mental health, where would this movie rank for you on our Rorschach rating scale?
This was a very fun and entertaining 4.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't go any lower than a 4. It just seems too perfect. Like, this movie has a lot of surprises and has a lot of twists and turns. And I, like you said, Mark, like, I really just had a blast with this movie.
Yeah, it was far more than what I expected. And I never expected to be that entertained with a dude in a truck stop talking to a painted glory hole.
Doesn't it sound fun to say glory hole?
I have teenagers in the house, so.
And now it's time to talk about mental health. What a segue. If you guys are new to our content, Mental Health Moment is where we take a theme of mental health and we talk about it from the movie, which we're reviewing for a few moments in hopes to deconstruct the stigma surrounding mental health. And for as much as we have joked around about the Simmons glory hole character in this one, he has a rather tragic backstory, and just, I'm not going to get into it, but there's a portion of it where he confides in Wes and says that someone had basically placed these unfair expectations on them. And from someone that has taken value in what others think and how others see them, the entire business of someone placing unfair expectations of you definitely has an effect extremely negatively on your mental health.
Well, I mean, look at some of the child actors. Okay. A lot of the child actors, their parents were big name actors, and or like Liv Tyler, her dad, Steven Tyler, one of the most well-known singers and one of the biggest bands ever in the world. And it puts a lot of pressure to live up to that kind of family name or reputation in a case like that. Or Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore was another one. Her parents were actors. And in her early career in life, she was a mess. And she had a ton of expectation put on her.
Yeah, I think also, too, there is, you know, not just you talk about parents, but especially child actors, I think, is a great example of this, because not only is there expectations for from parents, but you also have like studios or like executives that also have these they're also placing these expectations on the child actors. One of the Mark and I are different generations, so people that grew up in my generation, if you know what iCarly is or who it was, but
yes, Sam,
Jeanette MacArthur just wrote a memoir called "I'm Glad My Mom Died," and in that book, she talks about how like the parental abuse and bullying of those unfair expectations messed with her sense of identity, messed with her mental health, messed, like, you know, led her to eating disorders like anorexia, and really kind of also messed with her self, her perception of how she saw herself. And I think for, you know, even going back into the 80s, talking about child actors like, we did Lost Boys a couple episodes ago, but, Corey, what's his last name? It's not Corey Ames, Helms, Ames.
It's Corey Haim and Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman, you know, like, well, also went through that. And I mean, some child actors don't ever make it through them. We get, like, they get really effed up or go to drugs. Amanda Bynes is another example to point out of that.
Yeah. I believe Macaulay Culkin was another one that had a lot of issues in the beginning, once he kind of got famous. A lot of those child stars have issues.
Yeah, but I think even stepping back from childhood actors, or you know, just even into everyday people like you and I, like having those placed on you, like, again, I brought up with Jeanette McCarthy, or however you say her name. You know, she, I think, is a great example, because, you know, from someone that, while I will never say I've never had unfair expectations placed on me as an individual, I've had lots of friends and I've seen lots of people I care deeply about have emotional breakdowns, you know, go through severe depression, experience bullying, or you know, have self-esteem issues because of that stuff. And I mean, it really does mess with the way that you see yourself.
Oh, I had a good friend in high school that his dad was super successful, big house, nice cars, all that stuff, and they were almost like the parents that you have to be in extracurricular activities or you're not doing things right. If you're making C's, you're not doing good enough, even if he was doing as good as he could, things like that. He got into college and he just went downhill quick because they were still kind of like that, but he wasn't under their thumb anymore.
Yeah.
And he went downhill and fell into depression, had anger issues and all kinds of stuff. I've actually recently ran into him not long ago, and he seems to have kind of turned himself around and got himself in line in life and is doing okay now.
That's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, he's, but he had a lot to deal with, and a lot of it came from the pressure his dad was putting on him. Don't get me wrong. His parents were good people. His dad and his stepmom were good people. They just, their expectations were so high because of where they were. It made everything difficult for him.
Yeah. And I feel like I can't speak to something like that as a parent. But I know that parents from, you know, talking with my own parents, but like also at the same time, like having conversations with friends that are parents, parents always mean well for the most part, and they're doing the best that they can. And, you know, sometimes I think that they just have these really lofty expectations that it's almost inhumanly possible to live up to, or we want our offsprings to be miniature versions of who we were or who we wish we were at that age.
Well, there's no handbook on it. There's all you've got is how you see other people raise kids and how you were raised. And that's kind of what you have to go on. And you're not perfect. You're human like everybody else, and you're going to make mistakes. But some people just end up being more strict than others.
Yeah. And again, I bring it all to say that like it affects your mental health, and it can affect how you see it. And like in your friend's case, sometimes stuff like that can linger for a while, and you don't really see the effects of it until either you get around a change of people, because to you that's normal, or you start to kind of see the way that you're acting towards other people like feels out of normal. So like it might take years for even those results to manifest.
Yeah. And I know some other people with far worse outcomes than my one friend, but it also depends on the person and situation you're dealing with, or they're dealing with. Some people can handle it better than others. And what may just seem like a walk in the park for me may be significantly worse to somebody else, or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for us on this episode. But once again, if you or someone you know is listening and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, click the links in the show notes below to check out our mental health resource library. And be sure to check out Glorious whenever it hits Shudder beginning this Thursday, August 18th. Mark, where can people find you?
I just have my painting on Instagram, painting miniatures, and been doing a lot of updating recently, working on a competition piece for Journeyman Miniatures. And I am Titanium Juggernaut Painting.
You guys can follow me. I'm on Captain Nostalgia on Letterboxd, and also on TikTok under Gent, GENT Ghostface. And you guys can follow our parent company, Victims and Villains, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. You guys can support us financially via Patreon or PayPal to help us continue our 2023 charitable efforts of getting mental health resources into conventions and film festivals. And you guys can also submit your nightmares to us for our 2023 Horrific Hope Film Festival. Links are going to be in the show notes below. And we're also accepting screenplays this year for our screenwriting competition. So once again, make sure that you guys check out Orphan First Kill when it hits limited release in theaters, video on demand, and Paramount Plus beginning Friday, August 19th, and check out Glorious exclusively on Shudder beginning August 18th. And if you guys would like to try either service, links are in the show notes below. And remember, until next time, the longer that you gaze into the abyss, the more the abyss gazes back into you. Have a good night.